What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Will Parkinson NFL on YouTube. We are rolling down the different promos for myself here. Another fun episode here today. Obviously, friend of the show, has been on a couple different times. Friend of Connor Rogers, co-host with Connor, obviously in the Stock Exchange, PFF, does a million different things, has the best camera in the business. Trevor Sikkema. Trevor, good seeing you. I've got to spend a lot of time last week.
I know, man. No, it's exciting. Like January, February is the time that you and I actually get to meet up in person because it's like Senior Bowl stuff, Combine. I feel like I see you more at Combine more than anything else, but it's always a good time, man. Obviously, it was great seeing you in Indianapolis and good to chop it up here with you.
Yeah, no, the Senior Bowl, I'm a like loser. I like to go back to my roots and I have to like peer over everything and like to watch and whatever. But yeah, obviously an exciting time of year, right? We got free agency starting and the league year starting in about 4 or 5 days here. We're getting leak central, as you said a million times during the combine. Mike Evans will be a buck. Guess what? Mike Evans is a buck. As I'm wearing a Keyshawn jersey.
I was going to shout out the Keyshawn jersey at some point, man. That's a throwback. That's a Super Bowl champion right there.
This is an eBay $12 purchase. Somebody probably bought this, forgot they had it. Guess what? I have it now, motherfucker. That's mine. It's obviously an exciting time of year. We'll hit on a couple of the free agency notes and just some things that kind of could affect the Jets or kind of affect teams picking around the Jets. But I wanted to start, we'll start offensive line and kind of go from there. Obviously, look, this draft is one that I think this free agency class is really guard heavy. It's really Tyron Smith and a bunch of mid to kind of crappy left and right tackles. The free agency class is really good on the interior. This draft is kind of really good on both sides of it. It's just really nice to be able to have some flexibility at tackle because a lot of these guys are more right tackles, especially early on in the draft. You obviously have the top two, Joe Alt's a monster, tested like an absolute alien. Like it was cool to see that. I guess, what do you make of this offensive line class as a whole? Like, what's your true impression of it? You know, we see a lot of people, what always happens at the combine is everyone's like, this is the best class ever. And it's like, is it actually, or are we just prisoner of the moment? But obviously, you know, I kind of have it all Fashanu. And then I think there's a little bit of a gap, especially in terms of left tackle potential. Is that kind of how you see it? How do you see this tackle class as a whole?
I think it's a really good tackle class. I really do. I like Joe Alt a lot. I think that he is truly a plug and play guy. And then I would say there's a little bit of a gap. And then I would say that Fashanu is in the next group. But to me, so is Taliza Fuaga from Oregon State. And I would also say now Troy Fautanu from Washington is basically in there too, because I've loved Fautanu's tape at Washington, but I was always under the impression that, one, he's going to be a little bit shorter, and he is. It's the thing. Like, he's only, I think, just above 6'4", which is very low percentile for an offensive tackle at the NFL level. But then he's got, like, 34.5-inch arms. So he's got, like, 70th percentile arms. So the height, obviously, is nice, but the height is simply, to me, when you talk offensive tackle guys, an indicator of length. Like, do you have the arm length? And a lot of times you look at these guys, you go, oh, he's 6'6", he's 6'7", he's 6'8". He's going to naturally have the arm length just because he's built like that. But for Fautanu, he was shorter. We assume that he had shorter arms, and he's got long arms. So to me, he is now one of those guys where I talked about him at center. I talked about him at guard and him being fantastic at both. He is now a prospect that I would say, just like Peter Skoronski last year, I would let him fail at tackle first before I moved him inside. So all of a sudden now, I'm going to have 4 offensive tackles in my top 20 at least, maybe in my top, you know, 15, 16 as well, depending on where I have Fautanu when it's all said and done. But I think it's a pretty strong tackle class. I think that Alt can be a top 10 type of a dude. And then when you get right around where the Jets are picking at number 10, Fashanu is absolutely on the board. Fautanu is all on the board as well. And then Taliza Fuaga. So I think that all of those dudes are worthy selections of being in a top 20 and a top 15. So at the top, I do like this offensive tackle class a lot. Now, you get a little bit further. Like, I know the Jets don't have a second round pick. You know, maybe you get creative. Maybe you get a little aggressive if guys falling down in the second round. Maybe you could trade up. Like, that's always a possibility. But once you get past those 4 guys that I mentioned there, Amarius Mims is nice. J.C. Latham's nice. Tyler Guyton is nice. But after that, and those are guys that I think are probably going to go in the top 40 anyways, you're really taking a risk on an offensive tackle that you would expect to be able to really contribute for you, certainly in year one or even in year two. So that's how I view this offensive tackle class. I like it, even without a guy who's like, you got to take him in the top three kind of a player.
Yeah, then you can start getting like the Christian Jones of the world and Patrick Paul and these other guys where it's like, they might be good. I don't know. And again, you don't know if anyone's obviously going to be good. That's the whole fun of the draft. But
no, I do. I've got the crystal ball.
A crystal ball, and like pretty some guys are a lot easier to kind of figure out. You mentioned a few names there, and I think it's interesting the position the Jets are in. I know you and Connor did your 3-round mock on Stocky Shanes, which was awesome. And, you had them trading up 2 spots just because the way the board broke, it's kind of hard for them to pass up on all. It didn't overly cost them a ton. That said, there's a good argument to be made that if Alt's not there and they don't love Fashanu, maybe Fashanu's gone, maybe Latham's gone. Like, we don't really know what's going to happen. When Tennessee and Atlanta, they've all talked about either playmakers or defensive guys, but the draft's weird and we never really know what's going to happen, especially with, either new coaches or and things of that nature.
Right.
There's an argument to be made they should be trading back, especially if J.J. McCarthy starts to fall. I can't believe I'm saying fall to 10 because I don't think he's a top 10 player. But that said, there's an argument to be made. Do you trade back a little bit and pick up a second-round pick to get an Amarius Mims, a Tyler Guyton, who I like Tyler Guyton, and then I went to the Senior Bowl. I was like, I love this guy. Like, this guy's great. And, but sometimes you do overreact to that stuff. I think it is a three-day All-Star game. Do you feel like if you were – if you put your Joe Douglas hat on or, your Woody Johnson or whoever, in that draft room. And do you feel like it's almost not get cute with this pick? I think this is one of those things where, yes, the extra draft capital would be nice, but also there's some question marks with the other guys more so than I think a Fashanu, a Fuaga. Like the question marks with them are more, can they be elite as opposed to just good? Or the other guys, it's like the floor and Tyler Guyton and Amarius Mims is like pretty damn low. It's just right. The ceiling's really damn high.
Right. No, yeah. And I think that's how the league is looking at a lot of these guys as well. Now, scouting in the draft is all about tell me what they can do, right? It's about their strengths, and you hope that you've got the right coaches. You hope you've got the right coaching staff to be able to get the best out of them there. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I never really think about the Jets as a trade back team just because you mentioned there's some options for interior offensive linemen and free agency that you could be able to fill, but they really need two good offensive tackles, coming out of whether it's free agency or the NFL draft. And for you to move on from 10 and pass up on one of the chances to get one of those guys, it's hard to think that that would be the right move. Even if you got like a second round pick, like I'm trying to think of myself, I'm looking at the draft order right now of the teams that would be willing to move up.
You're looking at like, but then you're so far back, right? You're Tampa, Houston, these teams where it's like,
You can't go that far back.
No, that's the problem. Pittsburgh, maybe, I guess. But what are they coming up for?
Right. I'm looking for, if you could get Vegas to give you 44 to jump Denver and Minnesota if a McCarthy is still on the board. Maybe.
And then even at that point, you're probably just asking for Devontae, right? Like, and you're putting in a 2025 too to get Devontae here. Like, that's where.
I don't know if they're going to get Devontae from.
No, they're not.
I mean, you got to ask,
right? Like, at that point, you're like, screw the second round pick. We'll take the guy who's right. Who's amazing at football already, and we know it. That's the problem. Like, that's where it becomes tough. It's like, how far can you really go back? That's why all these trade downs and trade ups, which I was going to ask you about, is like, it seems good in theory. Oh, we'll accumulate 12 picks. Well, it's like, If you're the Chargers, yeah, you need depth, but like, I don't know, like maybe they're a bad example. But like, if you're the Giants, do you really want to trade back and maybe you miss on Malik Nabers and like maybe you love Brian Thomas Jr. at 14 with Vegas or whatever? But I don't know, Nabers is like probably closer to Marv than he is to the other two guys. I don't know. It's like a weird. I guess everyone's different with that, but I'm just saying it's a weird mix where trading back becomes really tough, even if you accumulate extra picks.
Right, right. That's why it's like it's a decent conversation. I think the sweet spot that you would probably want to land is like with the Rams at 19 or the Steelers at 20, right? Because you could probably get a second round pick for them because that's far enough of a distance to kind of warrant picking up an extra second round pick. Maybe that's worth it for you. I think if you are at 19 and 20, you still have a realistic chance of getting. And it kind of depends, right? The only reason why you might do this is if Joe Alt is the only offensive tackle off the board and you have a lot of guys that you're comfortable with, like I said, Fautanu, Fashanu, Talise Fuaga, Tyler Guyton, Amarius Mims, you know, guys like that, J.C. Latham as well. If you say to yourself, there's six offensive tackles that we would take and we think can start in this league, which I don't think is a guarantee. I don't think every team's going to be in on every single offensive tackle. Then you say to yourself, all right, we're currently sitting at 10. New Orleans might take one. Seattle might take one. Jacksonville might take one. Cincinnati might take one. Worst case scenario, four of them are off the board. We're going to have our pick between two of them. Now, that sounds great in theory, but it only matters if you really believe that all six would be starting caliber for you at the NFL level. And I just am not convinced that's the case. I don't know if every coaching staff is going to believe that every one of those guys is for them, because they're all very different. Like you said, some have higher floors, some have lower floors, some have higher ceilings, some have a lot of experience, some have don't have a lot of experience. And so I think just that process itself is going to weed them out. So trading back sounds good in theory for the Jets. I just don't, I'm not convinced that we live in a reality to where they're actually going to pull it off.
Well, a lot of being a Jets fan or following the Jets or covering them is living in a non-reality based world. There is an argument to be made. There's an offseason, I guess, plan, or I don't know how, you know, something that can happen over the next couple of weeks where they don't necessarily are not pigeonholed to go offensive line at 10. Now, that would take something I think is not super realistic, although I think people think that they're going to get Tyron Smith. I think Tyron Smith's the chief until proven otherwise. like until it doesn't happen, and maybe it won't happen. Maybe we're
is
just
that
reading.
Is that a thing? Like, do Jets fans like believe they're going to get Tyron Smith?
Oh,
is that a
thing? It's Tyron Smith, Connor Williams, and they're getting Mike Onwenu. And
oh, sounds great.
Yeah,
sounds great,
awesome.
Actually,
they're going to have a top three offensive line. No, like, I think there's a real world in which the Jets add Connor Williams and John Runyon, and then it's AVT, Runyon, Tittman, Connor Williams, and you're one tackle short. Like, I think there's a real world, but let's just say they get Tyron Smith or a left tackle of pro, someone from the pro market. There is an argument to be made they could go elsewhere and go playmaker at 10, because that's obviously another issue. Obviously, Brock Bowers is the name that I think kind of gets connected most to the Jets, just because top five or six player for me probably in the draft. Maybe at worst, he's a top seven player. So you're thinking, okay, we get a blue chip guy. We'll just keep stacking these blue chip guys. Eventually, we have to be good. Not always the best strategy, but sometimes it works. But there's also the argument I'm sitting there going, maybe if Bowers is gone, like, do you consider a Rome Odunze if he gets to 10, for example? Or do you, like, are you so impressed with Brian Thomas that it's like, we can't pass up on this guy. He's 6'3 and runs 4'3 and was almost as good as Malik Nabers, who's going to go in the top five. Is there a world in which, I guess, I kind of answer my own question here, but like, if there's a world in which the Jets solve left tackle, is there a world in which you, Trevor Sikkema, are drafting and saying, can I afford to go playmaker here? Like, am I tempted by a Bowers, Thomas, Odunze, whoever gets to 10?
I think if one of the top three receivers gets to 10, you seriously have that conversation, right? I think if Odunze or Nabers specifically, because I think it would be impossible at this point for Marvin Harrison Jr. to last that long.
That would be insane.
You're right. If one of those two wide receivers happens to fall, which I think is unrealistic at this point, I think all three are going in the top eight, the top nine at the very least, with Chicago sitting there at number nine. I don't think I would pick Bowers at 10. Like, I still don't. I would still be picking offensive line. You've watched what injuries have done to the offensive line over the years. Like, at that point, let's say, like you said, it's almost like pipe dream free agency situation where you fill basically all of your needs with some veterans. I'd probably be taking Fautanu at 10. And I'd say, I have now the ultimate player here who can step in for me at any spot. If one of those guys that we signed in free agency at guard or at tackle is not holding up their end of the bargain, I'm putting Fautanu in that spot. And I'm not really going to worry about it because he's that good of an offensive lineman. Maybe you're even giving him a little bit of time to figure it out. And then fourth of the way through the season, midway through the season, whatever, he might be able to step in and you could have your best five available. In the very best case scenario, you have a reserve guy that you really trust who could basically play all five spots along the offensive line. For as good as Brock Bowers is, I just don't think I would pass up an offensive lineman at 10, no matter what the situation is. I would rather, in any free agency situation, still take offensive line at 10 and then take a wide receiver in the third round. That's still where I would go.
Yeah, no, look, I think there's every argument to be made that's probably the way to go, especially knowing we can take a guy long. Like, that to me is also a spot where you either go, we could take a guy who's probably could be a guard, could be a tackle, whatever, as you mentioned. I always say Fatanu. I don't know why. Fatanu, I think, or something. I don't know why.
I think it is. It's Fatanu,
okay.
I think.
Okay, it's good. All right,
yeah, yeah. No, you know, I've been saying it wrong for a long time. I've been saying Fatanu, sir. Or so I was always saying, like, the emphasis on the back part of the world, but I guess it's Fatanu.
Probably my least favorite part of podcasting is pronouncing people's names. Or that's a spot, right, where if you love – I'm just, again, taking Tyler Guyton at 10, for example, it would be rich for as much as I like him. But if you wanted to take a guy where you're like, or Amarius Mims, where you're like, listen, he might not hit, and we might be fine this year without him, but, like, if he's really good, he's going to be a top 10 tackle in the league, and now after a year we're not screwed because we get Tyron Smith and he retires. Like, the argument to be made is there, and you mentioned third-round receiver. There's a lot of guys, and this is always – I think probably one of the hardest parts of your job, honestly, is doing these mock drafts and doing these things where it's like, they might be there in round four, they might be there in round two, because you might like the player and 10 teams might love the player in round two.
Right.
But they also, some of their teams might not. Ricky Pearsall, obviously, of your Gators, is a guy that I know my brother's been super high on dating back a year ago. He was awesome at the Senior Bowl. There's the Roman Wilsons of the world. There was the Ladd McConkeys. There's Malachi Corley. There's a million guys. It feels like this is a quite a deep receiver class. Is there guys that to you, you're like, listen, if they're there in round three, Jalen Polk, Jalen McMillan, like there's a lot of guys. I know the top end's really good at this class. I also feel like that round two through three, three and a half, I'll call it, just because it's hard to evaluate. Those are the guys where it's like, probably need to be in the right system to be good. But if they, Ricky Pearsall is your third guy as a rookie, like probably he's putting up pretty good numbers in any offense.
Yeah, I mean, so the Jets pick 72 right now in the third round. And just looking at some wide receivers that I have around that area, Xavier Leggett, Jalen McMillan, Tez Walker, Johnny Wilson, Jamari Thrash, Brennan Rice, Malachi Corley, like all of these guys I think could potentially be options for them at number 72. And I think all of them in different ways, they're not the same type of wide receiver, but all of them can be contributing players. They really can. So I think that's why I continue to go back to handle trenches at 10, no matter what, and I'll get you a good wide receiver at 72. Like Jermaine Burton from Alabama is a guy whose tape I absolutely love, who it feels like the NFL is not nearly as high on him as I am. So if he's available at the beginning of the third round, I mean, sprint the card in. I mean, him and Garrett Wilson would be extremely difficult players to cover given how athletic they are, given how fiery and competitive that both of those guys are. And so that's a combination that I would also love there. So there are too many good receivers in this class for you to over. So like when you talk about 10, that's why going back to the question that you had before, if it's one of those top three guys, I'd consider it. If one of those top three guys makes it to the Jets at 10, I would consider it. I genuinely wouldn't consider it for anybody else, including Brock Bowers. I wouldn't. I'd go trenches, and there's too many good wide receivers that I could get at the top of the third round.
It's funny. Johnny Wilson, like, is one of those guys that might be a receiver, might be a tight end. I don't really know what he's going to be in the NFL. I just know that for a dude that big to run, like, in the low 4.5s, high 4.4s, and have a 4.2 or whatever, 4.1 or 4.2 shuttle, I was like, what? Like,
crazy.
You're 6'7", dude. You're not supposed to move like that.
Dude, he has I wish this guy could catch better. I really do. Because the whole point of wide receiver is that you have to be able to catch the football, catch. Right? Yeah. You have two jobs as a wide receiver. Get open, catch the football. And when I watch him at 6'6", 237 pounds, he's got a variety of different releases off the line of scrimmage. He understands how to get off press coverage, not just with his size, but also with finesse. He's a good route runner. He's got good wiggle to him. He can throttle down and change direction way better than you think with a player of that size. There are just some times when he just doesn't have the strength at the catch point. And it's like, damn, if you had that as your baseline, and then we had all of this other movement skills as the pluses, genuinely, he'd be a first-round pick. I mean, we wouldn't even really be having this discussion. We'd be talking about him as some of the giant first-round pick receivers that have come through over the last 10 years. But it's just his drop percentage is higher than you would want. And I think he showed that, unfortunately, at the Senior Bowl as well. There were just a handful of catches. Now, he had some impressive catches, too. I don't want to act like those don't exist on his tape. It's just inconsistent. Teams just don't gravitate towards that inconsistency. So I want, like, he's another guy who, if he's available in the third round, yeah, absolutely. Draft him. I think that'd be huge.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same page, too. I want to ask you about two or three more kind of draft-related questions, and then we'll finish on our two free agency questions. One, this is kind of the more last Jets-centric-related one. That developmental quarterback is something that depends what person you ask, is if it's important, is it not important, you know, should you really, does it matter? Like, is it worth a roster spot for a guy that you hope doesn't play and all this stuff? Like, I'd argue as much as there's not huge hit rates all the time with these, like with the quarterback position, you know, no matter what, you know, I do think there's an argument to be made, a Michael Pratt in round four that just have two fourths, I don't know, or a Jordan Travis you take on day three and you say, listen, you're going to be IR, you're going to be an IR guy this year, but you're going to sit in meetings with Aaron Rodgers and just learn ball for a year and, like, work with our coaches. And by the time you get back end of the year healthy, you get activated and maybe get to be on game day. I know it sounds like cheesy and whatever, but I think the Jets kind of have to take a quarterback at some point in this draft. Just saying, there's a good chance this guy will never play. But what if you find a cheap developmental solid spot starter backup for 4 years on like really minimal money? That's kind of ideal. Obviously, for every Kyle Trask, there's also like a Dak Prescott, right? Like, you're hoping you get a Dak or Russell Wilson, all these guys. Is there any of the quarterbacks, I mentioned a couple there, that strike you as like, hey, they're worth a flyer on day three, especially if they could be a spot starter, just solid backup down the line, at least at a minimum?
It's hard, right? Because if you're good, you get drafted high. I mean, it's just there's no way around it. There's no preference. There's no, oh, this guy doesn't fit our scheme. If you're a good quarterback, you get drafted high. So I look at guys like Spencer Rattler and Michael Pratt, and I think, yeah, I would love that. But unfortunately, I think you'd have to pick him in round three. You'd have to pick him with 72. And I think, I don't think the Jets can afford that at this point. I think that they need a wide receiver at that point, especially if they go offensive line in the first round, if they do what we expect them to do. So maybe one of those guys is available in round four, but I doubt it at this point. So then, you know, you're looking at some of the other quarterback options. I think Jordan Travis is a really fun college quarterback. I just don't think that he has the physical gifts to play at the NFL level.
Especially with half a leg now, like probably.
Yeah, he's putting his whole body into throws to zip it in there. His mechanics are a mess. I mean, his leg flies out like he's Randy Johnson on the mound. Like, it's just, there's nothing compact about what he does. He's a really fun college quarterback. I just don't think, yeah. And from all accounts, he's an awesome dude. And so, like, I hate, you know, bagging on him, but it's just, I don't think he has the physical abilities to play at the NFL level. Austin Reed, I just don't, from West Kentucky, I didn't think he had the consistency. The one that intrigues me is Tua's little brother, Talia Tungavailoa, but he too, like, he is a very inconsistent quarterback, but he's somebody who it's like, all right, he's had plenty of experience at Maryland. Maybe you draft him in the fifth round and you just say, hey, sit in the meeting room, see, like, if we need you for a short period of time, if Aaron has, you know, like a, you know, if he has like an ankle sprain and he's going to miss 2 weeks, maybe you could throw him in there and maybe he could go 1-1 for you. So to me, he's the one who's the most intriguing to me. I know some people will talk about Joe Milton as well. And if you wanted to draft Joe Milton as like a specialized short yardage, like QB sneak, tush push kind of a quarterback, you know, maybe you could do something like that. Or, you know, again, like third and two, you put Joe Milton in the game and you want him to run sort of like a QB power. And like, you have a lot of success doing that.
Just be a Hail Mary guy.
What'd you say?
Just be a Hail Mary guy.
Yeah. I mean, well, and then you could do that as well. And so I don't think that Milton's ever going to be accurate enough, because he had a chance to earn the starting job at Michigan. He had it for a little bit, and then he was replaced. He transfers to Tennessee. He comes in as the starter at Tennessee. Hendon Hooker ends up beating him out for the starting spot. And so it's like he had two opportunities now to improve and be a starter at the Power 5 level, and he wasn't able to. And really, the only reason why he was a starter this past year is because of their five-star that they have. I can't even pronounce his last name, Nico, who's going to be unbelievable. He just wasn't ready yet. And so that's why he got that one full year, healthy year as a starter. And so he's even somebody where I think people will go like, oh, just bet on the traits. And you can, but I don't think he'll ever be a viable starting quarterback for you, where Talia, maybe, like, there's a, again, it's a long shot, but he's, I think, the one who I'm the most intrigued by in that group.
Yeah, there's a lot of Josh Johnson, like, less athletic Josh Johnson vibes with Joe Milton, where it's like, oh, this dude can throw the ball 1,000 miles an hour and, like, in the right setting for, like, 2 quarters, you're like, this is kind of cool. And then you're like, oh, wait, if you have to move at all, your footwork just looks, turns into total dog shit. And like the whole Senior Bowl, I just was like watching him, like, the ball's so pretty when you're just standing there in 7-on-7. You're like, this is great. And then the pocket starts moving around, which it does in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, wow, this is really bad. Like, this is tough stuff. I want to ask you just a couple kind of more general NFL questions here as we kind of finish up. Obviously, a lot of the talk is, you know, coming out of, you know, Indy is always about the quarterbacks. It's always, you know, it's Caleb and the weird questions he gets and whatever. And everyone, you know, says he's Aaron Rodgers size and comps himself to Aaron Rodgers, which there is a lot of Aaron Rodgers comps. You have like a unicorn arm and these weird kind of terrible footwork that only works for you. Big personality, eccentric, I think is the right word I would probably describe him. There's, you know, Sims came out with his quarterback ratings and Drake May 6, which was interesting. Which you knew there was going to be one guy that consensusly everyone liked that Sims didn't like. But it kind of feels like the Jaden Daniels stuff is a little weird to me, only from this aspect. I'm asking this more because it could affect the Jets if he goes 3, obviously, to New England.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I don't think he's a top like 15 or 20 player in this draft. And I'm not sure, like, I loved the fact that it takes you a long time to get good. And then you're playing with these amazing guys. I know we use this argument for Joe Burrow too, where it's like, of course he's good. He had Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. It's like, I don't know. Burrow kind of felt like, maybe, I guess it's kind of a similar thing. And where I'll eat my words on this. I just don't know that, like, I love taking him number 2, but I kind of feel like he might go 2 now. And you're just like, I guess, like, hopefully it all works. Where do you at with, like, the Jaden Daniels, Drake May thing, because it feels like Caleb's a pretty clear one, unless there's that trade you mentioned. I think on Stock Exchange, if there's a little bit of an option there. Otherwise, it's Drake. Jaden and Drake.
Yeah, I firmly have Caleb Williams as QB1 in this class. I firmly have Drake May as QB2 in this class. I watched these guys for the draft guide about a month ago. Got through at least 5 or 6 games of them, looked at a lot of, you know, PFF statistics that we have, some advanced data that we have, and just the film, honestly, like, and Drake's clearly, again, like QB2 for me. I'm not even really thinking twice about it. Jaden ended up being QB3 for me, but he's not a top 20 player for me. You know, like you were saying, he's not in my top 20. And I don't want to say the only reason, because that sounds harsh, but like my board does account for positional importance a little bit, you know? So like if you play quarterback and you've got potential, like I'm going to bump you up. So I like Jaden. I think he's a good player. Here's the thing. I think his arm is being romanticized right now. Like, I think that people talk about, people talk about Jaden Daniels' arm and they're like, oh, he can make every throw. It's like,
he throws a good deep ball. He doesn't have a great arm.
That's the thing, is that Jaden has adequate velocity, but that's it. It's not like great velocity. It's not elite velocity. You watch Caleb Williams, elite velocity. You watch Drake May, elite velocity. Even some JJ McCarthy throws, he's got some heat on it. He's got some mustard
on it. JJ can spin it. It's just throwing the ball not to his right as it becomes a problem.
Sure. But when I look at Jaden, it's like you can throw with distance well, very clearly. He pushed the ball deep down the field with Brian Thomas Jr. and with Malik Nabers. But people got to realize throwing with when we say make all the throws in the NFL, very rarely are we actually talking about distance, because basically every quarterback in college football, if you are a legitimate NFL prospect, you can throw the ball 60 yards. Like, you can put enough air on it. You can kind of cock your shoulders back, and you could have the right trajectory on it. You could use the geometry of how far you have to put or how much air you have to put on the ball to get it 60 yards down the field. The guys that are actually impressive are the guys that don't have to put as much trajectory on it, and they can fire it in there with a ton of velocity deep down the field, to the sideline, over the middle, all that kinds of stuff. And when I watched Jaden, I just thought his arm was adequate. I thought it was adequate for the NFL level, but it wasn't anything special. And I think that it's certainly the two guys that I have above him have much better arm talent. So that's my big thing with Jaden Daniels and why he's not a top 20 player for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty soundly with you. Like, I think there's a lot of things to like. I know it's stupid, but like some of the hits he takes, they're only going to get bigger in the NFL. And like, it looks like a clown show at times when he gets hit. And I know it's like, he just is doing like weird fun stuff and he kind of just messing around. But like, I don't know, man, I've seen a lot of guys, like I watched Zach Wilson, who had like a body that probably wasn't NFL ready in a lot of ways. And he's got hurt every single year he played. And it was always the same thing of like, I make guys miss in college, and like, I don't really take a lot of big hits. I'm hurdling dudes in the Mountain West. And then it's like, you try to hurdle a dude in the NFL and you get spine busted and like, you're out for 6 weeks. Like, that's just kind of what happens. You know, even Baker, the great Baker Mayfield, right? Thick dude. Like, it happened to him too. And it kind of ruined his tenure in Cleveland, along with a lot of other things. Last two things here for me. One, we kind of mentioned, you know, quarterback, receiver. Who's one guy, I guess, coming out of the combine or coming out of, you know, doing your rankings and stuff like that, either you felt like you were maybe astronomically higher on, or just like you felt like, wow, I really like this player. Like, why aren't people talking about him enough? It could be a first round guy. It could be a guy maybe creeping into day two. Is there someone for you that sticks out where you're like, am I like missing something here? Why is everyone not talking about this guy as a top whatever pick?
Yeah, I was actually just talking with a good buddy of mine, John Ledyard, and he recently watched this player for a film review, and I agree with him, and we're both kind of the camp of like, why is everybody overlooking Jerzon Newton, Johnny Newton from Illinois? Like, dude's just really good. And like, I like Byron Murphy too. Byron Murphy's really good. Both of them are top 12 players for me, but I think Byron Murphy's like 9 on my board. Jerzon Newton is 11 on my board. So it's like, they're right there. Flip a coin. I don't really care. They're both going to be starting impactful defensive tackles in the NFL, I think. But you know, I'm reading all these mock drafts, and some people either have Johnny Newton in the 20s or some don't even have him in the first round at all. And I'm like, what am I missing here? You know, he didn't do anything at the combine. So it's kind of irrelevant to the beginning of your question. But in terms of players that I feel like I'm higher on, I don't see. I mean, if you take his 2 year sample size from 2022 and 2023, he had overall an elite run defense grade and elite pass rushing grade. I mean, like, the dude's just really damn good at football. So he's somebody who I don't understand why people are so low on him, why people think that he's a second round pick. He is such a productive player. He rarely stays blocked. His motor runs hot at all times. Great effort, really good first step, can hold up well against double teams decently well. I think Byron's a little bit better at it, but still, man, I think I don't know why he is so slept on, it feels like, from a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's, you look at the two Texas guys you hear a lot about Chris Jenkins, and I understand why. It's the name value, it's playing on, you know, being in the Final Four, that's what happens. But I agree, we are Johnny Newton's presser, and I was like, this dude is intense, man. Like, this dude wants to just rip people's faces off, which I like from a defensive lineman. Like, I'd like you to come over and want to just kill somebody. Like, that's kind of your job. I'm gonna rattle off a few names here. You don't have to say where they're probably going, but like, if someone said, this guy just gives me the vibes, he's a blank, I'm gonna start with an easy one, and I'm gonna be really disappointed if you don't get Cooper DeJean. Feels like a
Green Bay Packer.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Hopefully,
like, I also think that he could be a Philadelphia Eagle. Like, I think that's kind of gaining a little bit of steam.
You see him as a corner or a safety? Because that's like the, I don't know if it's just him. Not.
I feel like he'd still be a corner for that.
I think he should still be a corner.
Me personally, I think he absolutely should be a corner. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So he's not Reed Blankenship. No. I'll go with Olufoshana, who feels like a.
Oh man. Olufoshana. Hold on. Let me pull up the draft guide and see if any team speaks to me. Ooh. A Jacksonville Jaguar.
Yeah, he does feel like a Jaguar. He's a Jaguar or a Jet to me. I don't know what. Like, he either feels like he's brick or like he's just a Jaguar. He'd look cool. Look cool in Jaguars. Jaguar stuff. JJ McCarthy feels like a
Minnesota Viking. Honestly, like I know that one's gaining steam.
Why they go up to five?
I could absolutely see them going up to five. You know, I could see that Jim Harbaugh being on the phone, sweet talking whoever whoever's calling up to kind of draft JJ McCarthy, talking about how great of a decision they're making trading up for him and all that kinds of stuff. So, I think Minnesota, man, it's the team that I keep going back to that would be a good spot for McCarthy.
If not, some reason he just feels like a Giant. I don't know why, but he just gives me that'd be a weird move, but it could happen. Michael Penix is an interesting one. I feel like he's all over the place. Some people think he's a fourth round guy. Some people think he's a top 10 player. I don't know where I land. I think he's kind of like probably a second round player, but
the first team that came to my mind was the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
He feels like a Raider to me.
Yeah. He feels like a Raider. We'll finish with two here, mostly because I was tweeting at him this morning. Ricky Pearsall feels like a,
Carolina Panther.
Oh, okay.
At 33, it's just basically new Adam Thielen, you know?
Yeah,
it's
I was
just
gonna like, say, like, we get Adam Thielen twice.
It's new Adam Thielen. That's all it is.
New Adam Thielen with like way cooler tats. Xavier Worthy feels like a,
I mean, do I say the obvious one?
It's a Dolphins, right? Like, he has
No, it's the Chiefs, dude.
Oh, it's the Chiefs, but like, if he ends up on the Dolphins, then they're just like, we're going to ignore everything.
The Dolphins one also makes sense, but I feel like it's just, I hate saying the Chiefs because everybody's writing him to the Chiefs now, but they just release MVS. They need that player. He's the fastest dude in the world.
We can't bring up MVS on this podcast. People get very upset. He's going to be a Jet.
Sorry.
last question. Jets at 10, March 6th. Obviously, we will delete this if they don't go this pick. Obviously.
Of course.
Purely professionally, of course.
Yes.
But if it does, I will send it to Boy Green and we'll aggregate the fuck out of it. the Jets will draft who if they pick at 10? Or just their first round pick will be, because I don't want to do the semantics.
I will say J.C. Latham at 10.
Ooh, interesting.
That's why I'm
curious if people are going to be happy about that. There's a lot of weird. Some people are super high on Latham. Like, I've seen mock drafts and people, respected people in the industry, having like the top five or top eight. Mm-hmm. And other people think he's like not a first round player. I don't know. I think watch the other games other than Michigan.
He's a really good football player. And so you say like watch the other games of the Michigan. Even the Michigan game is good.
Yeah, he had one really, really awful play.
He's bodying people in that Michigan game. It's just, I think the last rep that people get pissed about, the one where Milroe gets tackled in the backfield with the game on the line. And it's a bad rep. For whatever reason, he thinks the defensive tackle is going to crash on him.
You can't convince me Milroe didn't like make the wrong call there or something.
I don't know if he did, but like Latham, you could tell at the snap, he looks to his left because for whatever reason, he thinks that the D tackle is going to crash on him and it's going to be just like a stunt. And it's not. And by the time he looks back towards the edge rush who's coming at him, they're already in his chest. And he just he pushes him back 2 or 3 yards, and then he runs into Milroe, and it's kind of like, damn, all right, well, that split second where you look to the left actually was the difference between the play not working or Alabama's getting in the end zone. So you got to look past that one play. Latham is good. Yeah. I think Latham is good. I think I'm higher on Latham than Connor is, but I think Latham's good.
The biggest thing I think and something that's hard in the draft community as we wrap here is like it's very difficult that – look, Evan Neal stinks, and it's tough because you're like, oh, Alabama tackle. Who's the last guy that went really high? Oh, Evan Neal. He's probably Evan Neal. Or who's the last USC quarterback? Caleb, it must be Sam Darnold, or he must be Mark. Like, that's what people do, and it's not fair. People did it to Stroud last year. Like, oh, wow, we got Braxton Miller and JT Barrett again. It's like, no, Stroud's pretty good. You just have to break some of those biases, unfortunately. It happens. The Jets have not done well with Florida players. Ricky Pearsall will be a Jet, and he will be awesome. and he will be actual good Braxton Berrios. But just thinking of swaggy white dudes that are on the Jets that hopefully he doesn't get a TikTok girlfriend. Alex Earl, stay away from my boy. Shout out Braxton. He's a free agent. You're not coming home, buddy. I appreciate you hopping on, as always. Obviously, good to spend some time the last couple months. And, you know, obviously we'll see you, you know, later in the year. Make sure you guys are checking out Stock Exchange. Trevor kind of teased it a little bit on Stock Exchange, the mock draft simulator. I believe you kind of mentioned there'd be a lot of, there's some fun updates happening to that. I'm not sure when you mentioned that, but you mentioned it somewhere that
yeah,
I heard.
No. I mentioned it on that episode. So up until like this point of the year, the draft rankings that the MDS works off of is normally just my rankings, but we're about to turn the page and make it the consensus ranking. So it is much more predictive. It's what we think is going to happen. So you guys will be able to run a lot more realistic first round, second round mock drafts with what we actually think is going to happen in the draft as opposed to just my ranking. Packers fans have been mad at me for a long time because I got Cooper DeJean as like eighth overall player and he never lasts until pick 25 for them. So they're pissed. They're like, this is a realistic option and I can never draft him. So we're fixing a lot of that. And I think that'll happen either at the end of this week or beginning of next week.
Knowing the consensus board, though, the Jets will pick everyone off the consensus board, like a Zaire Barnes pick in round six last year. I'm pretty sure it wasn't in Connor's top 400 players. And I'm sure he probably wasn't in yours either because nobody watched that Zaire Barnes tape. No offense. Appreciate obviously hopping on. Make sure you guys check out yesterday's episode with Aaron Wilson. This will be out tonight. And then Mike Tannenbaum will be on full free agency preview Saturday morning. I will ask him about his Russell Wilson to the Jets take and why he. I love Mike T. I'm very curious as to the reasoning and why that was. Rodgers and Russell Wilson, the quarterback meeting, would give me.
Incredible.
It would be incredible content.
You'd get Hard Knocks again. They get
like,
Hard Knocks
Rodgers,
again.
Rodgers like talking to me like, so future, like, what do you think about Future's music? And then Russ punching Rodgers. It'd be great. Appreciate it for listening. We will be back Saturday morning.